Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sycamo. With me is Benjamin Solak. If my voice sounds a little different today, it's because I'm in the great outdoors. I'm recording outside. You keyboard warriors should try it for once. Get out of your mom's basement.
Yeah.
Get some fresh air. Yeah. Vitamin D.
Idiots.
Need a little bit of it in your life. Maybe you won't be so mad on social media. I'm just kidding. I love all you guys. No, but I am outside today because all the people in the house that I'm staying with are sleeping. So I'm trying to be courteous. I mean, in reality, I could just yell from the living room and they could be awakened to a live version of the greatest draft podcast out there, which really...
And how lucky they would be.
Right. Like now I just feel like I'm robbing them. Shoot. All right. Let's start the podcast over. I'm going inside. No, I'm kidding.
Just post up right outside of the bedroom door.
We're keeping the tight end train rolling today. We are getting to the underclassmen portion of the tight end class for the 2020 NFL drafts. We got two pretty good ones today, two really fun ones. And these are guys who, as we go over them, we're going to talk about them being really good fits, I think, for where the NFL is going. And let's start with Hunter Bryant, tight end from Washington. Just because
I'm
Ben,
sorry, did you say Evan Engram?
Oh my goodness.
Hello.
There it is. So I watched Hunter Bryant's tape, and correct me if I'm wrong, was he a former wide receiver, right?
And I did not. I'm 95% sure. Let me double check.
Okay, because I believe I heard that on the broadcast. And I mean, he looks like a former wide receiver. The guys, you know, if you talk about tight ends, sometimes you're talking about guys who 6'4", you know, anywhere near 250 pounds, something like that. Guys who could play inline, have the mass and the strength, the size to play that inline tight end role. So normally anytime you're talking about tight ends, even in today's NFL, you're looking at guys who are around that 250, 240 range. He's about 6'2", I think 225, 230. So he's on the lighter side, and that shows up, I think, on his tape. But I can't say that that's a bad thing at all because of how much of a natural receiver he looks. He looks like that, and I tweeted this out on what day is it? Wednesday morning. Kind of, I didn't want to date it. I didn't want to say today. I tweeted this out on Wednesday morning that he is kind of the perfect mold for this big slot player that we're seeing NFL teams use a lot. And so that's what I thought when I got a little bit of glimpse of him. Not a ton of tape. I had to watch some Jake Browning cut up. So if you guys could pray for me as I have to recover,
not a typical vacation activity. So appreciate your dedication.
So I had to watch a lot of Hunter Bryant's tape. So that was kind of my initial thoughts of Hunter Bryant. Ben, you were watching the Pac-12 all last year. You kind of had it under a microscope more than the rest of us. I know Hunter Bryant's dealt with some injuries that have kept him out these last couple of years, but he is a true junior. He's made it on the field his first 2 years, didn't have to redshirt even through injuries. They wanted this guy on the field. What were your thoughts of him and your assessment of him going into last year, into this year?
Yeah, so first, I'm unable to find wide receiver high school background on him. He was number two tight end recruit according to according to Scout coming out. He was number three in the state, according to 24/7 Sports, number four, according to ESPN. And so he's a very highly regarded tight end recruit. So it seems that he was tight end all the way through high school. But absolutely, you know, like I make the joke, I said, oh, do you mean like Evan Engram? And the reality is that like Engram, I ended up grading him when he came out in 2017 as a wide receiver. Because not only is... and Engram is also this way, but not only is Bryant a little bit lighter, 240, he's also not tall. Like he's 6'2", 6'3", which like is tall wide receiver size, but that's like average to probably a little bit below average for a tight end. And so he really has, in my opinion, a wide receiver frame. And Engram was like 6'3", 240, and Bryant's like 6'2", 240. And so I think their body types are very similar. And then when you watch Bryant on the field, we've had a player who, like Trevor said, he did not have to redshirt his freshman year, played 9 games. He played in 5 games his sophomore year. You're asking me, why are we talking about a tight end like he's Evan Engram who hasn't played 2 full seasons? Well, it's not because he was sitting. It's because he was injured. And Engram has had multiple knee injuries to this point. And so the big concern and question mark with him right now is, how healthy can you be? And number one, are you still returning to 100% strength from now your second knee injury, which obviously we saw him at the end of the year in 2018. We saw him come back and look spry, look explosive, look strong. He had a good game against Ohio State.
Good word there, spry.
You see the catch against Ohio State?
Did I see the kick? Yes, I did.
Listen, that's the sort of thing that, like, you know, just gets the juices flowing a little bit. Like that, you know, that's not regular. Hunter Bryant with a beautiful one-handed catch through contact, you know, in a box-out situation against Ohio State. It was a lot of fun. But this is a guy who has been very successful as a downfield threat. He's a big play threat at tight end because he does have breakaway speed against linebackers and safeties. Obviously, Ingram was famously a 4-4 runner. I'm not going to say Bryant is a 4-4 runner, but Bryant's definitely fast. And you see success at all three levels. Bryant's regularly able to uncover quickly out of the slot on slants and on curls and on quick in cuts on late downs. They love to hit him in stride on those plays because he's a bigger body when you're going up against safeties who can leverage out, and he has a good catch radius, but then also he has yak ability as well. So they use him in the first level, and then on deep over routes and on wheel routes and a lot of stuff, you see slot sort of players running down the field, seam, over, and wheel routes. Bryant's been successful on all three. He has a good ability to adjust the football, attacks it high up in the air, and has the athletic ability to separate. And so there's really nothing we're concerned about for me in terms of his receiving ability. He's checked a lot of boxes. I'd like to see him put together a full season. But, like, you know, 2017, I mean, target-wise, it was John Ross and then him as a freshman tight end.
True freshman.
That's not regular for college tight ends. Like, that's irregular. Now, 2018, obviously, able to stay healthy, whatever it is. 2017, Dante Pettis, not John Ross. My apologies. So it was Pettis, and then it was him. 2018, unable to stay healthy. Now it's him and Aaron Fuller. Bryant should be a top two target for Washington if he's healthy. And he, like I said, a consummate three-level threat. But this is not a guy who is very successful as an inline blocker and should be better understood, just like Ingram and honestly, like the other tight end we're going to talk about today, as really a more of a wide receiver than he is a tight end in terms of how he's actually deployed on the field.
Doesn't Miles Bryant also wear number one? No, he wears number five, right?
Miles Bryant wears number five, and how dare you forget the number of our firstborn son.
Sorry, dude. I was literally thinking about that as I was watching Bryant the tight end, because I know that in college football, so you can have the same numbers on offense and defense. Like, there can be a 22 on offense and a 22 on defense. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, wait a second, is Miles Bryant also number one? Because that would be hella confusing if they ever decided to send Miles Bryant out there as well.
Number one on the Washington defense last year?
Byron, right?
Attaboy. Yes, correct.
Okay. The Evan Ingram, I think that's Evan Ingram as a comparison, Ingram was such a freak to me for how explosive he was. As I'm kind of listening to you talk about Bryant and how much success he could have as a receiver, you talked about a lot of the areas in which make him what I would call a natural, right? Just a bigger guy. It's hard to move at that bigger size, but he's smooth, right? I mean, like, whatever the routes are, he kind of knows how to weave in and out of space, knows how to play down the field. I mean, you mentioned the one-handed catch against Ohio State. There's so many things that he does that make him just a natural. And somebody on Twitter, what did they say? I think he said, like, scheme independent to where you could use Bryant, okay? Like, he doesn't necessarily have to play in a 21 or an 11 or a whatever, or with his hand on the ground, or however you want to line him up. This is a guy who you can use in an offense in a multitude of ways. The thing that makes it a little different, what makes me hesitant on saying Evan Ingram in specific as a comp, where I can see some flashes where we get some Ingram production from him, but how Ingram did it was so rare to me. As being a lighter tight end, how this dude was able to kind of like cut on a dime and explode at a bigger weight was something that was just super rare for me when I was watching Evan Ingram come out of Virginia Tech. And so I see some natural receiving ability to where I can somewhat get on board with that comp. Not necessarily how I get there, though, because I do still think that Bryant is certainly much more smooth than he is explosive. Although I was watching a couple of plays where I saw him get out of his stance and I was like, all right, brother, you're getting out of that stance pretty quick now. I don't know if you're too much, because initially I was watching him, I thought, okay, he might be a liability on the line. You know, you look at his size, you talked about his height there. He's clearly, you know, he's a smaller tight end. And I was like, okay, this guy might really not be, I'm not looking to put him on the line of scrimmage at all. But there were a couple plays where he was getting out of that stance pretty good and pretty fast, where he was making contact initially. And certainly you don't want this guy holding up against your big edge setting defensive ends, but you can get away with it every now and then. So I understood the scheme versatility of being able to play him where you want, and that bodes well to NFL offenses because it's all about mismatches, right? This entire position, this entire week we've been talking about it, the tight end position is just about creating those individual mismatches on a play-by-play basis. And Hunter Bryant really, I think, sets that table, even if there are little areas of his game where maybe I won't agree fully on an Evan Engram comp or something like that. There are clearly areas in his game in which he allows you to get that imagination flowing of being able to set up an offense where you're pinning him against a small corner or a linebacker that can't keep up or things like that. So the next guy that we're talking about is going to do that as well. But any parting thoughts on Bryant before we moved on?
Right. Yeah. When it comes to Engram, because the first thing, like, I watched Bryant's freshman film in preparation for his sophomore season before I realized that he was going to be a true sophomore, not a redshirt sophomore, and he was ineligible. I was so sad. You can, like, find, if you search Hunter Bryant on my timeline, you'll see, like, you got to watch out for Hunter Bryant next year. And then people are like, yo, he did not redshirt. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I need him in the league. When you watch Bryant as a freshman, you get, like, the Evan Engram flashes. For me, what it comes down to is in terms of usage, right, in terms of how he wins and where he's going to win from, where you want to put him on the field. Engram, you know, it's easy to forget because we just had, like, Noah Fant come out, right, and we had Mike Gesicki come out in the year after Engram. But when Engram tested, like, sure, he was 234 pounds. He's one of the lightest tight ends at the combine just ever. But he had, like, a 10.5 broad. He had, like, a 36-inch vert. He ran a sub-7.3 cone. And it was, like, I think it was like 4.3 flat in the short shuttle. Like, he was and then running a 4.42. He was unbelievable in terms of how well he tested in the agilities. I know Bryant is an NFL caliber athlete. I don't know if he's an Engram athlete. And the only way I'll know that is when he gets to the combine. Like, I won't be able to tell you that he's that. And I mean, he probably isn't, because Engram was, when he tested, an exceptional athlete. You know what I mean? And we've seen an athlete come out each year at the tight end position subsequently and also have incredible numbers. I'm not saying that's going to be Bryant. As a matter of fact, if I had to guess, I would say it's probably this other guy. But with Bryant, I know he's an NFL athlete, and I know he wins in similar ways to how Engram did at Ole Miss. And so we'll figure out the athleticism when we get there. You know what I mean?
Hard to think anybody is an Evan Engram, because dude's a freak. Next guy, but you kind of segued it into a little bit there, the next guy that we're talking about, Grant Calcaterra from Oklahoma. Man, I mean, like, not a lot of production from this dude. You know, not a lot of production from either of these guys that we talked about, but the tape, you enjoyed the tape a lot more than the stats. And I first was looking up the stats before I went to his film because I wanted to see usage and things like that, where he kind of won, whether it was at the beginning of the year or the end of the year, helps me focus on certain tape that I can look at. And, man, for as good as I think Grant Calcaterra's tape was, 26 catches all year. I mean, 10 catches the year before. He hasn't even topped 400 yards yet, and I'm watching some of these plays on his tape, and he's good, dude. Like, same mold, I think. Same mold, I think, that we're talking about here. This big slot player, although I think Calcaterra is even bigger than Bryant is, especially with height, and Calcaterra is a lot closer to 6'3", 6'4", than Bryant is. But I was watching, what were the games that I was watching? I watched the Texas game. I watched the Alabama game, and I think I watched the Texas Tech game when I was watching his film, and they use him everywhere. They use him out near the sideline. They use him in the slot right in the middle. They use him sometimes as an H-back, but a lot more times they're just trying to get this guy open space because they know that, hey, he's got the size to where you've got to put a player on him who is tall enough to guard him first and foremost. And a lot of the time, that's not a slot corner. And when it's linebackers or even bigger safeties that they're trying to put on him, Calcaterra can sometimes just work them, you know, with out routes or just straight up going long up the seam or working through the middle, things like that. They have him do a little bit of some wheel route action too, where he's getting his momentum going and just coming up the sideline or through the middle, whatever it is. And I think that I was watching his tape and I thought that he absolutely had a place in the NFL. When I watched him, I was thinking, this is where the NFL is going. The NFL is going towards guys who are like Grant Calcaterra, who can move the way that he can at his size. And he's got hands, too. Some of his highlight catches are pretty crazy body control for a guy that size.
You watched the Texas game?
Yes, I watched the Texas game.
They didn't do jack squat with him except throw him difficult catches. And he made them.
And he delivered, though. The dude delivered almost every time. He had the one-handed catch that was going into the corner of the end zone off of, like, a longer fade route.
Game winner.
Yeah, his touchdown before then was what was it?
Like
it was
full extension slant.
Yeah, it was like a little slant route where he was chopping his feet a little bit, going one way or the other. Boom, the hips all of a sudden flip, and you go, okay, man, a 6'4" guy being able to do that. I don't care what weight you're is. He's a little bit lighter of a weight, as we were talking about earlier. He's probably, if Hunter Bryant's running around 225, Calcaterra is probably 230, I think. So these are still lighter tight ends. But still, man, if you're moving your hips like that on a slant route and creating separation with your feet and your lower body in such a way where you're letting your 6'4" frame extend all the way and get separation that way, that's a double advantage, and that's something the teams are always looking for. That's something that Grant Calcaterra brings to the table, something I really liked about his tape. What'd you think about it, man?
Right, so interesting. You said if Hunter Bryant is 225, then Grant Calcaterra is probably 230, right?
Yeah, just because of mass, that's what I would think.
Right, do you know what Oklahoma has Calcaterra listed at?
Oh, no.
221.
Man, schools lie on the higher end, so.
Right. And it's weird, right? Because Bryant is 6'2", 241 listed. And
no way Bryant.
Yeah, right. And Calcaterra is listed 6'4", 221, which...
I might buy 230 with Bryant if they had him eat a lot before they had him weigh in.
I think Bryant is in the 230s. I think Calcaterra is in the 230s. I do not know who is actually heavier. But I do agree that I think Calcaterra is a couple inches on Bryant, which is interesting because that probably means Bryant's a little bit thicker with two C's than Calcaterra is. Because Calcaterra is not, I shouldn't say like he's light, but he, like, this podcast is the absolute last time I will accept talking about Calcaterra as a tight end. He is a wide receiver. Listen, Mark Andrews lined up exclusively in the slot, but actually had freaking tight end size. Calcaterra is a wide receiver. I mean, 6'4", 221, even if he's 6'4", 230. I mean, now he's dancing the Alan Lazard line, which is the worst thing you can possibly do, but still, he is not used like a tight end at all. When he blocks, yeah, it is very, very bad. He doesn't know how and why and what he's doing. And the way he runs routes, the way he addresses the football, are either elite for a tight end or they're good for a wide receiver. You know what I mean? Like to me, this is a player playing wide receiver. That's what he's playing. And we might call him a tight end, send him to, like, you know, the Senior Bowl in 2020 as a tight end. We might, you know, he might be tight end on the NFL depth chart. But if you're using this guy regularly in line and making him release through linebackers, and also if you're having him just run regular tight end routes, like, you're just stupid. This is not what he's done, and it's not what he's done well. And what Calcaterra does really well is he wins in isolation. When you put Calcaterra on a corner backside, he has the quickness to match that corner, to challenge that corner, to explode beyond that corner. He's clearly a good athlete. But when he's able to do it at his size, when I was able to win big boy situations, and that's how you got, like, those touchdowns that you got against Texas, right? Where in both cases, he's catching through contact and fighting through contact, either at the line of scrimmage or at the top of his route. And he's strong. He's strong in those circumstances because he has the size and the length that a lot of wide receivers don't have. But this is a guy who runs the whole route tree that Oklahoma asks of their wide receivers, which is not huge, but it's fine, out of the slot and out wide. Like, they will isolate him out wide outside of the numbers. He's not playing tight end. He's their biggest wide receiver. It's he and CeeDee Lamb are just huge wide receivers, and one of them is called a tight end and has bad hair, and the other is CeeDee Lamb. Like, this is the only difference. Calcaterra is probably the guy I would circle right now, having not watched Kobe Parkinson, who we're talking about tomorrow. Calcaterra is the guy I would circle as, like, people know of him, but he's the one who could rise in this class and really challenge for, like, a high tight end. You know, like, Mark Andrews was a third-round pick. I bring him up, obviously, 2018 draft. Yeah, 2018 draft, third-round pick of the Baltimore Ravens. Andrews played tight end at Oklahoma before, and there was, like, a solid demographic of Andrews fans. But the concern with Andrews was, okay, like, this is really just a guy who played wide out. He's not really going to block much for you. And how athletic is he? Calcaterra might have the same complaints, but I think he's markedly more athletic. And so now you're going to be in, again, Evan Ingram territory, where you have a sublime athlete who can't really play the position traditionally. But if you have space for him to be playing quasi wide receiver, playing quasi big slot, then this is a guy who is going to skyrocket up your tight end board, because if you have that role, he's built for it and he's been playing it at the college level. And so he's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but if he is your cup of tea, I think he's going to be very, very highly valued. Because if you think about it in terms of like 2017, like you said, very few targets, but he's playing behind Andrews, Westbrook, and they had Marquise Brown in 2017 for sure. And I can't remember if CeeDee Lamb was redshirting or if he was playing. I'm pretty sure he's playing. Andrews gone, Westbrook is gone. 2018, now he's playing behind Lamb and Hollywood Brown. In 2019, he's just going to be playing behind Lamb. Obviously, Oklahoma's reloading. They're going to have other targets. But Calcaterra is going to be one of their most targeted players. The one thing I'm looking for with him is Oklahoma used Lee Morris a lot in red zone situations. Calcaterra's got to get those reps. And Lamb's also going to be a good red zone receiver. Calcaterra needs to be a high priority target in the red zone. So if you're going to be a 6'4 tight end who's playing quasi wide receiver, I need you to win that goal line fade you won against Texas. I need you to get that target every week. Because I want you to prove that you can fill that role for me at the next level.
Yeah, it makes me think about, you know, discussing these two guys and talking about their sizes, and you talked about it like almost like a quasi wide receiver role. It makes me think that, you know, back in the day, just the way that it normally has gone in the NFL draft, it's like, okay, you're drafting the bigger athletic tight ends first. And then it's always seemed like, okay, later in the draft, you're drafting those tight ends who don't have the athleticism. And as we're going through this class of tight ends, it makes me think, boy, are we kind of getting to the point where instead of drafting the bigger tight ends who don't have the athleticism later in the draft, maybe it'll become just more common to draft like the pure wide receiver kind, like the tight ends who are athletic but not really big enough to play tight end, and almost like you're picking those guys at the end of the draft for tight ends. You know, you're taking that risk on the players who are better receivers than better blockers, right? Do you understand what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, like my thought goes
just because I think there's going to be more of them. Like, this is the mold that we're going towards. We're building our tight end pool, as you could say, to be more receiver based. And so I just feel like instead of drafting these bigger tight ends to play in line, that you're like, yeah, okay, he's not much of a receiver, but he'll be a blocker for us. Instead, you might see guys who are like, you know, he's not much of a blocker, but he could be a big wide receiver for us. Like, I think we'll see more of that from the tight end position than I do the big blockers, because I think that's where the value is in the NFL.
I hear that, and I get what you're saying in terms of, like, we're just going to have, you know, like, you have, like, raw athletes at the wide receiver position who are, like, you know, like, 5'11", 195, and they're great athletes, and they played at a low level. And, like, you know, you're just going to come and see what they've got and see if you can develop something out of them. And you're going to continue to see that in terms of tight ends who are just going to be this weird, like, 6'2", 235, you know, like, type. I brought up Alan Lazard.
Right.
People wanted Alan Lazard to move to tight end. And, like, all right, he'd be a good athlete at tight end. So, like,
people wanted J.J. Arcega-Whiteside to move to tight end, dude.
Right, exactly. Now, the reason I'm not skeptical of that, but I would push back against that is, when we were doing Shrine Game previews this year, right? I had tight ends. And when you go through the Shrine Game roster of tight ends, it's just every dude there can catch a 5-yard stick route and you know, fall forward through contact for another 2 yards. And then he can also block. It's like CJ Conrad, and it's Daniel Helm, and it's Max Sokol, and it's freaking Andrew Beck, right? And it's just a slew of, like, there's so many bodies there that it's just like, if you're going to draft the guy in rounds 1 through 3 and cite the fact that he, you know, is a good blocker, and he can run block, he can stock block, and he can hang in pass protection, and he's tough over the middle of the field, well, I'm going to come back at you in the war room with the tape of 7 guys who are going to be available on day 6 and say, listen, all of these guys can bring me that. Obviously, they might not be as good of receivers as this one, you know, more total player you're talking about. But if I can get that trait later, I don't necessarily think I can get, like, Hunter Bryant's after the catch ability or Grant Calcaterra's catch through contact concentration, one-handed catches later in the draft. So I'm willing to sacrifice the traits that I can get in round six for the sake of something that won't be
right. No. I'm not saying that I'm not arguing that the one's more valuable, like pass catching wide receivers are going, or tight ends, sorry, are going later. I'm saying that there's going to be more of them. So like what you just said right there, it is like pass catching from the tight end position is the more valuable trait, especially, or mold, if you will, because it's more than one trait, I guess, for where the NFL is going. I think more of those tight ends are going to exist. That's what I'm saying. Like those guys who, like you just listed all those Shrine Game guys, those are guys that are going to be now, I think in a couple of years, not even get drafted, because we're going to see more and more of these, you know, like Harrison Bryant type guys, you know, like these dudes who are just purely wide receiver type players that might get drafted later in the draft. And there's just going to be a lot more of them around that I think is going to push some of these other guys down. So I think my point was that as football kind of trends towards this offensive mismatch era, especially with the tight end position, we're going to see a lot more kids come through recruiting, come through colleges, and therefore coming through the NFL, who are just more receivers than blockers. And teams might go, "Eh, screw it. You don't need to block. Affect the game in the way that makes it you the most valuable." And so I think that we're going to see a lot more of these big slot type tight ends who are wide receivers in the draft pool in general, which will then lend towards more of them getting drafted even towards late in the later rounds. And so it might not be. Does that make sense now? Is that a little bit more clear what I was talking about? I wasn't saying that the value is different.
Right. No, I get what you're saying. And the example that I'll bring up, and it's an example that I brought up in a previous episode, and it is close to home to me, is Zach Ertz, right? In the sense that when Ertz came out, he was a 250-pound Stanford tight end. What did Stanford do? Stanford blocked, right? And Zach Ertz was in line. He was blocking. And Zach Ertz was going to be a complete tight end at the next level who could block, and he could go out and run great routes, and he could catch for you. He lines up more in the slot than he does in line for the Eagles 5 years later, right? And the reason for that is because while Ertz is a passable blocker in line, his strengths are accentuated by being in the slot. But also, all things equal, what he brings in the slot is just more valuable than what he brings in line, right? Like being able to win isolation routes against safeties and even against nickel corners is more valuable than being able to seal defensive ends on running plays, just in terms of how many explosive plays you're generating, how much yards you're gaining, your ability to score points. And so what would be interesting to me is if we'll see one big high school receivers translate into tight ends as they get recruited.
This is what I'm saying.
Right. See, like my thing would be, I would expect, at least if I were talking to a guy like that, if he asked me, you know what I mean, like this team wants me tight end, I would say stay with a team that can keep you receiver for as long as you can, so you get the reps catching the football in practice, so you get the reps running the route in practice, and then let the NFL flip you when you get to the NFL, because I just wouldn't want to go into college and be considered a tight end and be splitting my time blocking, because that's just not what's going to be valuable. You know what I mean? But I totally get what you're saying. And I think you can see in the career path of a guy like Zach Ertz, how even though when he came out, like there was a ton of love for his blocking and how often he was asked to block at Stanford, he's just become a big slot for the Eagles because that's what's most valuable about his game. And that's what helps the team win.
All right, I think it was a good tight end discussion there. I kind of thought of that out of nowhere as we were going through these guys, so I wanted to get your take on it because I do. I think that's where the NFL is going. That's why I think previewing these tight ends and previewing guys who you might look at their stats or their measurables, and you might think, oh, man, this guy ain't nothing special, but you got to realize this is where football's going. This guy could be absolutely something special. You were bringing up with Ertz there, and there's plenty more examples in the NFL. So we got two more tight ends, underclassmen tight ends, that we were talking tomorrow on Thursday. Then we're going to give our top fives for this tight end class and, of course, Fan Friday. So we're going to send out the Fan Friday question, I don't know, sometime on Thursday or something. So make sure you guys don't miss that. You've been asking some awesome questions lately. Fan Fridays have been fantastic. In fact, we're on 5 weeks in a row of the best Fan Friday shows ever. So we can't break the streak. I need you guys thinking of good questions. You can ask us whatever you want. It could be about football. It doesn't have to be I mean, 2 weeks ago, we ranked appetizers and desserts and kids cereal and cartoons and all that kinds of stuff. So be thinking of crazy questions that you could want us to rank, talk about, maybe even figure out a way to pin me and Ben against each other. That's always fun when we get the debates in there. But that's all on you guys. You got to ask the right questions. So two more tight ends tomorrow, top fives on Friday. Then, of course, your questions. Until then, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.